possibility of isolated tornadoes. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 69 degrees and overcast. In New York City, 71 degrees with fair skies. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
Greetings. Bienvenidos a todo mi gente escuchando in Washington and all points beyond. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. El Distrito Colombia here on this Friday, March 15, 2024. We're also heard on latinomediacollective.com. You can find us on Twitter under the name at LMC underscore show. That is at LMC underscore show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and today on the show, we put the spotlight on the U.S.-Mexico border as further militarization by Texas Governor Greg Abbott continues hand-in-hand with growing anti-immigrant rhetoric by far-right movements influenced by Abbott and other Republican lawmakers. Last month, Texas Governor Greg Abbott announced plans to build an 80-acre military base housing up to 2,000 soldiers in the city of Eagle Pass, Texas, along the border with Mexico. Earlier in February, a processing facility for recent migrants, also in Eagle Pass, was evacuated after right-wing extremists threatened to burn it down, according to multiple media reports. In addition, both Donald Trump and Joe Biden had dueling visits to the border to push anti-immigrant measures in different manners. So our guest today will tell us how recent events in Texas should be examined even further as signs of growing support of the Great Replacement Theory, among other things, that is putting immigrant groups at serious risk. So with us on the show today is Heidi Byrick. She's the co-founder of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. Welcome to the show, Heidi Byrick.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. We have plenty to discuss here, and we're going to go in depth on some of the things I mentioned at the introduction. But before we go any further in the conversation, can you tell us first about your organization, the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism?
Yeah, so the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism was founded in 2020 to push back against far-right movements and to spotlight extremism, whether it might be white supremacy, neo-Nazism, anti-immigrant sentiment, as we're going to talk about here. Our goal basically is to push extremist ideas back to the fringes. And I should just mention, since we're talking about anti-immigrant sentiment, that I worked for years at the Southern Poverty Law Center and have been tracking anti-immigrant movements almost since the day I started working there back in 1999. So it's a really, really important topic. And unfortunately, every year has seen growth among anti-immigrant movements in this country.
So needless to say, there's been a lot to discuss in 2024 in and of itself. So I'm going to do my best here to present a timeline of events, you know, beginning this past February. So for example, on February 1st, your organization, along with several Democratic lawmakers and others, held a press conference warning people about the growing anti-immigrant extremism along the U.S.-Mexico border. Around the same week, an incident in Eagle Pass, which I mentioned at the beginning, forced a migrant center to be evacuated by threats from anti-immigrant groups. Later in the month, both President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump held separate publicity visits to the U.S.-Mexico border amid the state's increasing or escalating militarization by Texas Governor Greg Abbott. And speaking of Abbott, this month, the Supreme Court ordered Texas to allow federal border agents access to the state's border with Mexico, where Texas officials have deployed miles of concertina wire. There's a lot to process here this month, but Devin Burkhardt, who is president of the Institute for Research and Education on Human Rights, and who was also in that same press conference that I mentioned, in my opinion, sort of crystallized recent events by saying that, quote, the standoff between Texas and the federal government has become a magnet for far-right vigilantism. So I want to ask you two questions here. One, if you can expand sort of on Devin's theory here, as well as other key points in this press conference that also deserves our attention.
Yeah, well, let me start with Devin's comments about far-right extremists in the border. There is no question that Governor Abbott's standoff with the Supreme Court and with the federal government over immigration and his rhetoric, in particular, his rhetoric that immigrants are, quote unquote, invading the United States, has activated far-right extremists across the board. So, for example, my organization found Proud Boys chapters in Texas saying things like, get your guns, go to the border, right? Just some of the most extreme elements in our society, these white supremacist groups who have really latched onto this idea and are focusing their support on Governor Abbott and their anger on immigrants. And you mentioned the migrant center that had to be evacuated because the FBI found all these horrible threats online. Just around that same time in February, there was also an arrest of some militia members who were planning to go to the border and shoot both migrants and Border Patrol agents, government officials. They were found with all kinds of guns in their cars. And this is just an example of what happens when you demonize migrants with the kind of language that Abbott and others have been using, because you make people feel like they're, hey, there's an invasion going on. We should be able to shoot back. This is why this is so particularly scary overall. The other thing is, of course, Eagle Pass became the site of this convoy of people who considered themselves representatives of God, I think they said, a convoy made up of conspiracy theorists, far-right extremists, Christian nationalists, a whole gamut of far-right figures who went down to Eagle Pass and inserted themselves into this situation. And it's clearly not what folks who are living in the border area want to have happen. Eagle Pass business leaders, faith leaders, and others were very clear about that. And it just adds to the whole danger of what's going on down at the border. And if Abbott keeps up this rhetoric, which is, of course, quite rife on the far right among people like himself, other governors, other elected officials, it puts immigrants in danger every single day.
So the issue of religion is going to come back during the course of this conversation as far as religious fanaticism, as far as I'm concerned. But you sort of answered my question with the issue of Eagle Pass. The Washington Post actually did a good article with regards to Eagle Pass that also included detailed maps and satellite images of what we're talking about here and what this militarization actually looks like. So, for example, it's kind of interesting that one of the main bridges from Mexico to the U.S. has this golf course underneath it, which is kind of sort of an odd and perverse example of wealth inequality in and of itself right there. But be that as it may, in the same town, it's also one of the busiest railroad crossings from Mexico to the United States. And many migrants who don't have the means to do so have used freight trains to travel this at the risk of serious injury or even death. And in addition to that, Eagle Pass is not that far from another problematic area, which is Del Rio, Texas. And in that Washington Post article, I thought to myself, Del Rio sounds very familiar. And then I remember that, oh yeah, in 2021, this was the same place where Border Patrol agents on horseback were using whips on Haitian migrants. You know, it's been almost 3 years, but this is where those infamous images came from, which also gives another example of sort of the xenophobia and anti-immigrant sentiment that you mentioned and that your organization, you know, mentions as well, and also how militarized the border is as well. So I want to ask you both with regards to the threats by militias, which you sort of answered already, but also about Governor Abbott's proposal to create a military base there, because it seems like it's already militarized already based on what we've already seen.
Well, what Abbott's been doing in terms of measures at the border are just gross human rights violations. The Cortina wire has already led to harm to immigrants trying to cross the Rio Grande. He has taken it upon himself to decide that he's going to enforce immigration law when that clearly resides in the hands of whoever is the president, right? It's a federal administrative authority, and he is defying a Supreme Court order to do this by creating this sort of his own border militia, right? Like what you're talking about with the stationing them in Eagle Pass, creating this facility. This is so, so incredibly dangerous and also unconstitutional. You know, we have seen basically in the decades since Clinton came into office in the 90s, increasing militarization of the U.S.-Mexico border. You know, Clinton started building the wall. There have been more efforts to put more and more agents along the area, more surveillance around the area. Trump took this way, way too far. The only thing stopping him from actually putting the military on the border, which is what he plans to do if he happens to get into office again, is the fact that there's a law against it in the United States. And, you know, I think the upshot here is that by militarizing the border, you're not solving immigration problems, right? That is not what is going to lead to a safe, fair, and regulated border. I'm not an expert on immigration law, but it's clear that most people think that this is crazy. All it does is make the border area more dangerous for people who are crossing and for people who live there. I mean, one of the things that people don't seem to catch all the time is that when you're spreading hate and bigotry against immigrants, you don't know if somebody is an immigrant or an American citizen or here on some other legal status. And so everybody becomes subject to possible discrimination, hate, and maybe violence. And then, of course, you brought up the issue of actual violence by Border Patrol figures like happened in Del Rio with the whipping of Haitian migrants. This is a whole other issue and a serious issue that has really not fully been addressed. I mean, there have been many articles, and I'm not here to say that this is true of everyone in the Border Patrol, but there have been a lot of articles about Border Patrol agents spreading hate online, being involved in activities related to hate groups. It's a whole other dimension of what this extremism around border issues is leading to. And let me just say, writ large, the fact that Abbott thinks he can militarize the border, put concertina wire, put people's lives at risk, what he's really also saying is that these people aren't humans and they don't belong here. That they're somehow, I don't know, subhuman, subpar individuals. And that's just an absolute moral disgrace.
Yeah, and to prove your point, if you recall around April or May of last year, where there was a shooting in Cleveland, Texas, where a neighbor executed his other neighbors. And when this incident happened, Governor Abbott referred to the victims as illegals in his terms. So he was actually criminalizing the victims of that horrible incident. So that just sort of proves the point that you're making right there.
I guess you just can't expect much out of Governor Abbott, can you? He's willing to call migrants invaders. He's willing to denigrate victims. It's just a sorry situation.
Correct. Especially when we go back to that press conference I mentioned earlier, which you took part in last month. And I bring that up again because several lawmakers and other organizations like yours mentioned as a frame of reference the shooting of El Paso back in 2019. We're also heading into the anniversary of the shooting that took place in Allen, Texas, by an anti-immigrant individual as well. There was also the incident in the Rio Grande Valley region, right around the same time last year, where an individual ran over some migrants and it was alleged that he was saying anti-immigrant stuff towards them before he ran them over with his car, killing several Venezuelan migrants. So to what degree does an organization like yours carry that as a crucial frame of reference to what we've been seeing in the last 2 months alone, since the beginning of this year alone?
Well, I mean, look, hate speech and demonization of Latinos, Mexicans, migrants, you name it, is going to inevitably lead to violence. There's just no question about it. The incidents that you have mentioned are all examples of that. The shooter in the El Paso Walmart shooting a few years ago was deeply, deeply into white supremacy and the white supremacist great replacement conspiracy theory. He had come to believe that immigrants were somehow a threat to this country. He drove 600 miles to carry out that attack in El Paso. The Allen, Texas shooter was also deeply into white supremacist ideas, spouted great replacement stuff, and targeted people on the basis of this hate that he had imbibed. We know how dangerous this is. And just when it comes to the great replacement, which is this theory that there's a plot, a plan, sometimes they blame Jews for it, sometimes they blame, you know, meaning an anti-Semitic version of it, or they blame globalists for bringing people from other countries to displace or replace, hence great replacement, the population of the home country, which I would read as the white population. This idea has just run rampant on the far right and come out of the mouths of people like Elon Musk on Twitter and lots of political figures on the right. And the thing that is just terrifying about it is, how can you, in all good conscience, use the language of the Great Replacement conspiracy theory when you know it is directly connected to terrorism? And not just terrorism against immigrants and Latinos, as if that isn't bad enough, but the Great Replacement is what inspired the shooter at a Pittsburgh synagogue in 2018, killing a couple dozen people, inspired shootings at two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand that led to over 50 deaths, a synagogue shooting in California in Poway, a synagogue shooting in Germany. I mean, the list is really, really long. A person who killed Muslims outside of Vancouver, British Columbia. I could go on and on and on. And the fact that political figures, elected officials, would use this language is, it's insane. I mean, never in my life watching the far right have I ever seen an idea that is clearly white supremacist leap into the mainstream like the Great Replacement has. And the press conference that America's Voice organized that I was on with, I think, four congressional representatives, including Representative Escobar, right, who represents the El Paso area.
Yes.
They made clear over and over again how dangerous this is. And yet it hasn't stopped people like Governor Abbott from using the language of invasion. Or even worse, Donald Trump saying that immigrants are, quote unquote, poisoning our blood, which is literally something that Adolf Hitler said. This is an incredible demonization of this population.
You mentioned a second ago that several publications have revealed sort of the racist nature of Border Patrol. I think the most notable one was ProPublica back in 2019, when they discovered a Facebook group of Border Patrol agents saying the most heinous, morally bankrupt things about immigrants. This was around the same time that the image of Oscar and Valeria Martinez, who was a father and daughter that drowned face first in the Rio Grande Valley River, you know, that image came out around that time. And they were saying all sorts of horrendous things about immigrants dying, especially with that image. And I bring that up because in the Washington Post piece that I mentioned, Eagle Pass has also been notorious for a lot of drownings. In addition to the buoys and the concertina wire that's been implemented, you know, under Governor Greg Abbott in the last few years alone. And so it's deadly, and we should not understate how deadly, you know, this part of Texas is with regards to the conversation that we're having here. Let's turn our attention to the quote unquote Take Our Border Back rally, which attracted some armed and dangerous groups. And I think you mentioned in passing already, this rally also included speakers like former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin and Ted Nugent, which is also odd and perverse in and of itself. There were pictures of the event from Reuters that also featured a few Confederate flags, as well as a lot of religious imagery, including someone being baptized during the event. Again, odd and perverse. But although the event did not generate the large turnout that organizers had anticipated, can events like these lead people to believe that more rallies like these will follow so long as the militarization in Texas continues? And before you answer that, just to be clear, that there were also similar convoys in Yuma, Arizona, and San Ysidro, California, along with what was more publicized in Texas.
Yeah, well, the fact that they weren't able to get 700,000 people to the border is not something that I think we should focus on. What's important about this rally, a few things that are important, or the three rallies, really, as you noted, is that these were the largest far-right protests we've seen in the U.S. since January 6th and the storming of the Capitol. So that's a big deal. These people drove lots and lots of distances to be involved in this. So it shows us how anti-immigrant rhetoric and standing side by side with someone like Governor Abbott can be extremely motivating for the far right. The other thing about it is the kind of conglomeration of groups that showed up down there at Ingalls Pass was very reminiscent, again, of the kind of people who stormed the Capitol back in 2021. We had QAnon adherents. We had militia members. We had other kinds of conspiracy theorists, too, as well as Christian nationalists. And this is what led to images of crosses and the baptisms in the horse troughs and things like that. These kinds of people were also at January 6th. So this is not a group of people that should be taken lightly. I mean, thank God there was no violence involving them with others or with migrants. But the fact of the matter is that they would drive that far to do what they thought was standing up against an invasion is very, very concerning. And I'm sure as anti-immigrant rhetoric ramps up in the campaign that's coming, we're going to see more calls for people to protest in this way. And we should be worried about that because these things can clearly spin out of control like they did on January 6th and like they did in Charlottesville in 2017. And given the fact that a lot of these people are armed, it just raises the danger level. I also think the fact that the rallies were relatively big and brought, you know, a lot of people around just means that immigration is going to be a horrible political football for the right over the next year.
Yeah, you'll excuse me if I'm looking at another computer screen here because I'm looking at the images that were presented by Reuters. And one of the groups that was seen at these events in Texas and in California was this group called the Exiled Patriots. This was a group that was also, a few of them took part in the January 6th insurrection, which you just mentioned. And for our listeners out in the West Coast, they gained their notoriety in San Diego as counter-protesters to the Black Lives Matter movement around 2020 and did not hide their use of certain words against Black people in that part of the country. So again, it's an example of sort of the people that migrated to, for lack of a better term, to these particular rallies. So you mentioned the issue of lawmakers, you know, using all sorts of hateful rhetoric. And let's turn our attention here to Senator Ted Cruz in Texas, because he posted on social media this flag of Come and Take It, which was in reference to the slogan from a flag flown during the Texas War of Independence. In this case, replacing an image of a cannon with concertina wire. So amid the conflict with the federal government last February an original version of the flag dating to 1835, flew over the headquarters of the Texas Military Department. The Texas Military Department. And so this adds another component to the anti-immigrant hate and racism and all these other bigoted things that we've discussed here, is this idea, this, I don't know how to express it, but this idea of secession by Texas officials being expressed by Greg Abbott and now Ted Cruz here, among others as well.
Yeah, you can't put much past Ted Cruz, can you, when it comes to extremism? I'm not surprised to hear that he would post something like that. You know, actually, this point about secession that you're making is an interesting one, because all of the rhetoric that Abbott used in responding to the Supreme Court decision, right, that he should basically cease and desist from involving himself in border stuff, harkens back to Civil War type rhetoric, right? The states are not going to listen to the federal government. The states are going to decide. And I can't remember if it was 21 or 24 other governors that signed on with Abbott in a letter saying that the states should be able to patrol their own borders. I mean, the governor of Idaho, I think, even sent some kind of guard unit down to the Texas border. So, you know, they're essentially saying we reject the idea that the federal government has the authority to do what the federal government clearly has the authority to do. And all of this reeks of the Civil War or reeks of Texas secessionist movements of the past. And, you know, so here you see Ted Cruz playing into that. You see Abbott playing into that. And people's lives are at stake with these games. And that's the thing that's just so appalling. They're clearly trolling for votes in these actions. But, you know, people are going to pay the price with the demonization. And it's unfortunate that Abbott won't just back down and let the federal government do its job with immigration. But he's not.
Yeah, I'm just shaking my head. It's 2024, and we still have lawmakers revisiting the Civil War with regards to Texas trying to secede from the rest of the country. And as I mentioned before, Reuters has the pictures of people with Confederate flags at these convoys. So we could think about it in a philosophical sense, but we could also simplify things by saying, let's make it clear, the Civil War was about slavery and all the underlying bigotry that goes along with it. And so those are the people that are pushing this anti-immigrant sentiment. And this is why we wanted to have somebody like Heidi Beirich on the show today. We're speaking with Heidi Beirich. She's the co-founder of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. This is the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. We're going to take a quick break right here. Back with more in a minute. Stay tuned.
América, dado su situación tanto política como económicamente, ya para muchos no hay otra solución que abandonar su patria, tal vez para siempre. El mexicano da dos pasos y aquí está. Hoy lo echan y al siguiente día está de regreso. Eso es un lujo que no me puedo dar sin que me maten o que me lleven preso.
Es lindo México, pero cuánto sufrí. Atravesarlo sin papeles es muy duro. Los 5,000 kilómetros que recorrí, puedo decir que los recuerdo uno por uno.
That was Los Tigres del Norte, and you're listening to the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. Reminding everyone that you can also follow us on Twitter under the name at LMC underscore show. That is at LMC underscore show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and we're speaking about growing extremism at the U.S.-Mexico border with Heidi Byrick, who's the co-founder of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. So I want to go now to an important side note here, and people may think that this is unconnected, but hear me out here. So in addition to monitoring anti-immigrant extremism along the border, the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism has also examined the close relationship between the Conservative Heritage Foundation and Hungary's authoritarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban. Your organization laid out a very good timeline of events showing the Heritage Foundation sponsoring or taking part in events held by similar far-right organizations in Hungary. Now, at first glance, this story may seem to have little to do with the issue of immigration. But Heidi, when you look at the issues of Christian nationalism, anti-LGBTQ rhetoric, denial of women's healthcare rights, and outright xenophobia, we can see that people like Governor Greg Abbott have been in favor of these things independent of whatever is happening in Hungary. In fact, both Abbott and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis were at the center last year of Republican efforts to basically legislate LGBTQ people out of existence. So, to the best of your ability, can you draw or can we draw other parallels between your coverage of anti-immigrant hate here in the U.S. with what your organization has referred to as Orbanism in this other story?
Yeah, your listeners are probably wondering what Hungary has to do with all this.
Exactly.
But the truth is that the leader of Hungary, Viktor Orban, has created what the European Union calls, Hungary's a member state of the European Union, that they call an electoral autocracy. In other words, Hungary is not a democracy anymore. And what Viktor Orban did is he consolidated this autocracy through going after three populations. The first were migrants during Europe's migrant crisis back in 2015, people coming from the Middle East out of the Syrian war. Banned them from the country. He put his own concertina wire up around Hungary and kept migrants out and said, you know, that Hungary doesn't need these people. They don't belong here. He's on record saying that Hungary is essentially a white Christian nation and he's against miscegenation, race mixing. He's actually said these things. He then went after the LGBTQ population, demonized them, rolled back their rights, then went after women. This society that he has created, which he himself describes as Christian nationalist, is the model for what conservatives are looking at now. And you think to yourself, well, my God, Hungary's so far away, et cetera, et cetera. Well, Orban was a key speaker at an event called CPAC that was held in Texas a few years ago, where the Great Replacement was talked about, demonizing LGBTQ people, and Orban was a speaker there. I think he also did an event in Florida at one point, which is why DeSantis is connected. And we shouldn't be surprised that conservative groups look at what he's done in Hungary and think, oh yeah, that's the way we want to go. No immigrants, no LGBTQ people, no women's rights to bodily autonomy. And we're going to be overtly Christian nationalists, so we're going to privilege a conservative version of Christianity over all other religions. That is exactly what conservatives in this country want to do. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can go to our website and read about a plan that the Heritage Foundation is spearheading called Project 2025 with 100 other organizations, many of them connected to DeSantis and to Abbott and other conservative governors who are anti-immigrant, anti-LGBTQ, et cetera. And they say there specifically that the nation that they want to create is going to be a Christian nationalist nation that demonizes people of color, women's rights, LGBTQ rights. And if you read their immigration section, it's horrifying. They make Trump's family separation activities look like nothing. They would go much, much further if given the chance. So this is why Hungary matters, because that's the road that these people want to take us down. And that means the end of multiracial democracy. It is at its heart a racist vision. Right? People of color. I don't care who you're talking about. Black folks, immigrants, Muslims, whatever, are going to have their rights stripped in very serious ways if this idea comes to fruition. And it has happened. It happened in Hungary, and that's why they like this as a model.
And see, this is why I said that while Abbott and DeSantis may not have a direct relationship with Orbán's administration in Hungary per se, all the parallels are there with regards to anti-immigrant sentiment, anti-LGBTQ sentiment. And while they can't say openly like Orbán does that Hungary is a white nation, we have to remember that around this time last year as well, the other big headline was people like Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott banning ethnic studies. So it's a roundabout, or I guess I could say another expression of what Orbán has been pushing, you know, in Hungary with regards to being a white nation in and of itself. Another issue I want to bring up with you that's gotten my attention in the last few weeks has been the issue of Project 2025. So for those who may not know, can you tell us what this is and why it may matter to some of the things that we just discussed here?
So Project 2025 is an initiative of the Heritage Foundation, which is a rabidly anti-immigrant, anti-woman, anti-LGBTQ organization. And what Heritage has done is they've brought together about 100 far-right organizations to create a plan for the next conservative president. That's how they put it. The plan, if you actually take the time, which I sadly did to read, is more than 800 pages long. But it lays out in great detail everything the next conservative president will be doing and will do from the moment that they step into office. And we should keep in mind that no matter what happens with the elections this year, this plan's not going away, right? These far-right movements aren't going away.
Yeah.
This is their vision of what America should look like. Many of the groups who are co-writers of this project are listed as hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center. We listed a lot of them when I was working there. Anti-immigrant hate groups like the Center for Immigration Studies. Anti-LGBTQ organizations like the Alliance Defending Freedom. On our website, globalextremism.org, you can read about those organizations and read about the plan. But here's what it's going to do. It is definitely going to roll back rights for women. And I'm not just talking about banning abortion federally. They're going after contraception. They're going after no-fault divorce. They'll end all diversity, equity, and inclusion type efforts that the federal government is involved in. They will put into place the most harsh immigration policies this country will have ever seen if this comes to happen. They'll strip the State Department of doing things to protect vulnerable communities like the LGBTQ community. I mean, it's a very complicated plan because it talks about every agency. They will end public funding and support for NPR, PBS, right? So there are things not related directly to human rights, but to press freedoms and that are in there. Maybe one of the two scariest things in there beyond what I've just said is they plan to fire a lot of civil servants and replace them with politicized employees in the federal government. So get rid of our apolitical civil service and instead put partisans into positions. And the head of Heritage has already told the New York Times in an article, this guy named Kevin Roberts, that they're going to fire a bunch of people. The other thing they're going to do is politicize the Department of Justice and the FBI, strip their independence, and make them arms of whatever the administration is that can essentially go after their enemies. So these two agencies, and I know that it's never been perfect in history, but are supposed to have a certain amount of independence to administer justice and involve themselves in investigations, are going to lose that. These are all elements of Project 2025, and I'd encourage your listeners to go check it out on our webpage. I hope I don't sound hyperbolic or crazy saying these things.
No, not at all.
They wrote this, right? They have put their plan to gut our democracy and our civil rights in the open. And that's why I encourage people to go read about it and see what this means for this country. And some of this stuff is already happening at the state level, right? You know, Abbott is trying to put in place his own little harsh immigration policies on the Texas border. I don't know how many anti-LGBTQ and anti-trans laws have been passed, especially in red states lately. So elements of this are happening at the state level, and they will do it at the local level, the state level, and the federal level, wherever they can do it. And we will not have a diverse democracy. We won't have a democracy if this happens. And this goes right back again to what I said about Hungary, right? No more democracy there. That's the road that this will take us on. So there is a lot at stake. this year.
And just to be clear, that while the focus in this conversation has been mainly on Texas, when it comes to anti-LGBTQ legislation, we saw so many copycats last year, and they proliferated so quickly in various parts of the country that I have to say that I was planning to do a show just on the anti-LGBTQ legislation that's taking place throughout the country last year. But there was a point in time where there were so many that it was hard to keep up. You know, there was a time where it seems like there was one new anti-LGBTQ thing every week in a different state that you couldn't keep up with all the anti-immigrant legislation. And we could make the same argument of banning ethnic studies and with regards to immigrant rights or lack of immigrant rights and all sorts of other anti-immigrant legislation. So I bring this up because, and I asked you about Project 2025, because while the name says 2025, it's not going to go away in just 1 year or that 1 year. And it most certainly will affect a lot of people of color and women as well in the process. So you mentioned the issue of the media and sort of the normalization of certain language or certain ideas with regards to migrants in the media. As I mentioned at the beginning, both Biden and Trump made separate trips to the border between Texas and Mexico. And to no one's surprise, Trump made his usual racist, incoherent diatribe on immigrants. So I actually have a clip here of one of his most recent rants. So here it is.
Nobody can explain to me how allowing millions of people from places unknown, from countries unknown, who don't speak languages. We have languages coming into our country. We have nobody that even speaks those languages. They're truly foreign languages. Nobody speaks them.
So that by itself is not a surprise, and it's pretty consistent with what we've known about him for some time. But on the same day as Trump's latest rant, which we just heard, in spite of previous examples over the years of his racism, here is what Biden said with regards to his immigration plans and with regards to Donald Trump.
I understand my predecessor's legal pass today. So here's what I would say to Mr. Trump. Instead of playing politics with this issue, instead of telling members of Congress to block this legislation, join me, or I'll join you in telling the Congress to pass this bipartisan border security bill. We can do it together. You know, and I know, it's the toughest, most efficient, most effective border security bill this country has ever seen. So instead of playing politics with the issue, why don't we just get together and get it done? Let's remember who the heck we work for. We work for the American people, not the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. We work for the American people. And let's remember who we are. We're the United States of America. No, I mean this. Think about this. There's nothing, nothing beyond our capacity. Nothing when we work together. And if all things we should be working together on is this, we have the formula to get it done.
So that's Joe Biden asking Donald Trump to join him in passing this harsh anti-immigrant bill that's been around for several months now or several weeks in the news recently. So I bring this up to you because many immigrant rights groups have criticized the current migration bill as harsh and, let's just say it, no different from Trump's policies during his administration. So do you find a normalization of policies based on xenophobic and far-right beliefs equally or more dangerous here? I mean, it's one thing for far-right groups and Donald Trump to say what they say because we know through their actions and their history and previous rhetoric, you know, who they are. But the normalization of the same language from people who would otherwise be sort of, you know, benign on other things. Is that problematic in and of itself?
Yeah, I'm not an expert on immigration policy, but rather on the far right. But, you know, folks who I respect deeply, like America's Voice, have major concerns over this particular bill that Biden is touting and asking Trump to work with him to pass. That it really is not the road to go down, and that Biden is becoming more and more extreme on immigration in the wrong direction. And it's very sad to me that that's actually happening. Working with Donald Trump, of course, seems just absurd, or maybe it's just a campaign tactic of some sort, considering that Trump has, you know, shown nothing but racism towards Latinos since the first day of his campaign before back in 2015, right, when he said Mexicans are rapists. immigration does need to have policy solutions. But going harder line on that, I'm not sure I understand what the thinking is behind the Biden administration. We need a humane immigration policy that solves some of these problems, not to just get harder and harder line. And frankly, when Biden does that, and this has happened in a lot of European countries, you end up validating the arguments of the far right, right? As you move closer to their position. So it's not something that I like seeing out of Biden. And, you know, working with Trump is just ridiculous.
Profoundly ridiculous. And it boggles my mind. I'm still shaking my head as to how he would say that, considering everything he said in the past, Biden, everything he said in the past about Trump and his racism, and still have the temerity to ask Trump to join him with a bill that is essentially no different from that of the Trump administration. It just boggles my mind. And even now, I have no way of crystallizing the absurdity of those comments by Biden this month. So we have about 5 minutes left, but before we go, I just want to point out that this article about the Heritage Foundation by Global Project Against Hate and Extremism, I think there are a lot more parallels with this story and that of immigration that people realize. So we're going to create a link to this article on our Twitter account so people can learn more about this issue and about your organization as well, Heidi. So before we let you go, you know, is there anything else that we need to be on the lookout for? Or do you want to point out something else that we haven't mentioned yet during the course of this conversation that should be cause for concern as this rhetoric and as this militarization continues to go hand in hand and seems to continue to grow in Texas? It's not exclusive to Texas. We mentioned Arizona and California earlier, but, you know, what else should give us cause for concern here?
Well, first of all, thank you for sharing that information about the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. I mean, I think we're all going to have to be on our toes for bigotry, racism, and hate that we're going to see accelerating over the coming months. I do think people should read about those plans, the Project 2025 plans that conservatives have in mind for us, so that they're fully informed on what that agenda looks like. And, you know, I also want to point out that that civic action and Eagle Pass with, you know, pastors and business leaders and so on was a real positive thing, standing up for the community and for migrants' rights. And you could be powerful on the local level. And so I would encourage people to look at what they did. They pulled it together real quick. And when you see hate rearing its ugly head in your community, these are the ways that you can respond.
I'm glad that you ended on a positive note, because there are people that are fighting the good fight in Texas. And most of the ugliness that we mentioned is coming from the government and not from the people of Texas itself. It's always worth noting. And I just want to say as well that we'll also create a link to the article or the report that your organization did on Project 2025 as well, because it's going to be something that we're going to have to focus us more, you know, in the coming weeks and months ahead. But in the meantime, we've been speaking with Heidi Byrick. She's the co-founder of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. We're going to create a link to both of these articles on our Twitter account. But in the meantime, Heidi, thank you very much for being on the show with us.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. You got it. And with that said, that is it for today's show. We want to remind everyone, you can follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can also follow us on Twitter under the name @LMC_show. That is @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez saying thank you very much, everyone, for listening. That's it for today's show. Adios. Nos vemos. Ciao.
you're invited to the timely book event with Jake Johnston about his new book, Aid State, Elite Panic, Disaster Capitalism, and the Battle to Control Haiti. Tuesday, March 19th at 6 p.m. How did a nation founded on liberation, a people that successfully revolted against their colonizers and enslavers, come to such a precipice, to a state of near collapse? Hear from Jake Johnston of the Center for Economic and Policy Research on how long-standing U.S. and European capitalist goals ensnared and re-enslaved Haiti under the guise of helping it. Jake will be joined by former member of Congress Andy Levine and Dr. Nathalie Fedre-Pierre, assistant professor of African diaspora history at Howard University. That's Tuesday, March 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Bus Boys and Poets, 450 K Street, Northwest D.C. Get more information and RSVP. Go online to bit.ly/aidstatebooktalk. That's bit.ly/aidstatebooktalk. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
Celebrating 20 years, the New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project, brings the vibrancy of African filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora to the DMV at the AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 15th to the 28th. The festival features 26 films from 16 countries, including 3 years premieres and discussions with filmmakers. Explore the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa at the 2024 New African Film Festival. Tickets and full schedule at AFI.com/silver. That's AFI.com/silver. Or call 301-495-6700. 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York. I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. Russian President Vladimir Putin is expected to easily secure another 6-year term in office during an election scheduled for this weekend. The Kremlin has cracked down on dissent, issuing lengthy prison sentences for war critics and rights activists. A few candidates approved by the Kremlin are nominally challenging Putin in the election, but several other candidates were blocked from running. Putin and the Russian state have sought to project confidence about the course of the war in Ukraine, playing up the recent capture of the city of Avdiivka. Putin has toured weapons facilities and visited soldiers. During a state TV interview earlier this week, Putin reiterated his willingness to use nuclear weapons if Russian sovereignty is threatened, but he also said he doesn't expect nuclear war. The Russian election will be held across 3 days, beginning today. Australia today announced that it will restore its funding to the UN agency dedicated to humanitarian relief for Palestinians, joining Sweden, the European Commission, and Canada in reinstating funding. The agency, known as UNRWA, lost hundreds of millions of dollars in funding from Western countries several weeks ago, following Israeli allegations that some of the agency's thousands of staff members participated in the October 7th Hamas attack. Australia was one of 15 international partners to freeze funding for UNRWA, leaving the agency facing imminent collapse. The United States still has yet to restore its funding to UNRWA, and spokespeople have said it is waiting on the results of an investigation before making a decision. The U.S. yesterday imposed sanctions on 2 Israeli settlements in the West Bank and 3 settlers it accused of undermining stability in the region. The State Department said the 2 settlements were used as bases for violence against Palestinians. The sanctions are the second package issued by the U.S. against Israeli settlers in the West Bank. The first package, from February, targeted 4 men accused of being involved in settler violence. Israel's far-right finance minister, who lives in a West Bank settlement, called the sanctions part of a, quote, campaign designed to tarnish the entire state of Israel. A U.S. State Department spokesperson said Israel needs to address settler violence, quote, not just for the sake of the victims of this violence, but for Israel's own security and standing in the world, end quote. Fulton County DA Fonnie Willis, who is leading one of the criminal prosecutions against former President Trump, must choose between stepping aside from the case or removing a special prosecutor with whom she had a romantic relationship. A judge in Atlanta ruled today that the relationship created, quote, an appearance of impropriety, though he did not say that it amounted to a conflict of interest. Judge Scott McAfee also questioned the truthfulness of some testimony from Willis and the special prosecutor Nathan Wade. Trump's attorneys had demanded that Willis be removed from the case altogether. In the case, Trump and 18 co-defendants are facing racketeering and other charges for their attempts to overturn the results of the 2020 election in Georgia. And overnight tornadoes ripped through several central U.S. states, killing at least 3 people and damaging buildings. The worst of the damage was in Ohio's Logan County, northwest of Columbus, where a sheriff said he expected to find more than the 3 dead already uncovered. The storms also hit Kentucky, Indiana, and Arkansas. A tornado in the town of Winchester, Indiana, injured 38 people and damaged or destroyed about 130 homes and a Taco Bell. More severe weather was forecast today for areas of the U.S. South, including the possibility of isolated tornadoes. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 69 degrees and overcast. In New York City, 71 degrees with fair skies. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.